Hi, I'm Dalvet Quince. One way to help manage type 2 diabetes is to regularly exercise. My exercise program can help get you into a routine that works for you. Keep in mind, managing blood sugar also takes the right
diet. Hi, I'm celebrity chef Franklin Becker. Ever since I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, I've adapted my cooking style without sacrificing flavor. If you want to learn more tips about diet
and exercise,
visit mytype2transformation.com.
Word on Today FM.
Time for the week trending, and having given us the 5 of 5, Ben Finnegan has come back into studio where he's joined by Orla Ryan, news correspondent of the journal.ie. And let's talk about the weather first here in Ireland, because have we become a little bit soft when it comes to bad weather, Orla? Have we come a little bit, we're always obsessed with the weather, but when we get a bit of cold weather, are we now exaggerating it with these orange weather warnings?
I don't think so. I think it's a very tricky one for Met Aaron. We had Pádraig Tobin the other day saying, you know, that -5 is just, quote, kind of normal winter weather and there shouldn't be an orange weather alert.
Was there much snow in County Meath where he's from?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how badly Meath was affected, to be honest, but I think it's kind of, you know, no matter what Met Aaron do, they'll say, if someone says it's orange, they'll say, oh, that's, you know, too high. And then somewhere that's really badly affected might say, actually, it should have been red. We were snowed in, or we had no electricity for 2 days, or whatever it might be. So I think they have come under fire before. And it's kind of, some people have said that you should have, you know, different colours within a county. But that obviously would be incredibly difficult to communicate. Let's say if North Cork is worse than South Cork or whatever. So I don't think we have. I think, you know, sometimes, yeah, there's a red warning and it's not as bad as they think it's going to be. But that's a good thing. But let's say it was yellow and then it turned out to be a horrendously bad storm and somebody lost their lives. Everyone would be saying, why hasn't Met Aaron put a stricter warning in place?
Well, Met Aaron has on its website, you can Google it, Met Aaron weather warning criteria. All this criteria for every weather warning is set out there. We don't use an impact-based assessment like the British Met Office. They use.
What do you mean by an impact-based assessment?
Well, the British Met Office look at the potential impact of what the weather will have, and that's why they're going to issue yellow, amber or red. Met Aaron, literally, for a low-temperature alert, -5 over a widespread area, that's orange. And that's what happened the last couple of nights.
Simply because of the temperature which will be reached, or the speed of wind, or the amount of rain.
Literally.
It's a volume issue rather than an impact issue.
You can Google it and see all the criteria from yellow to red for each different weather event.
Some people have questioned why very often when it's orange here, it's yellow in the north, and the UK system, their Met system, it seems like there are maybe stricter criteria to get to a red, for example, or even an orange. Some people have said, you know, we use different criteria here, but that's not to say the Met Aaron criteria is wrong. Just sometimes people say it should be yellow and it should be orange or whatever.
Like the last few nights, it was status orange in Louth, right over the border and down. There was no warning. It's two different models that they use.
Okay, Kevin Sligo says, in 2020, it was -20 for a week and snow for 2 weeks. Pipes frozen over Christmas and we all got by. This week is just giving teachers extra holidays. That's Sligo.
Where was that? Greenland? -20 for a week in 2020?
It wasn't -20, but the snow was way heavier in 2010.
2010.
Yeah. Was very bad. 2009 and 2010 were very bad, but I don't remember getting to -20.
Well, I think the weather warnings have post-dated that.
Another one says, the day with snow used to be a novelty. Now it's an implement of fear to be wielded. Like everything else, bad news sells more papers.
The only person getting afraid is that person. Nobody else is getting afraid.
Another one says, Matthew should have been in Kerry this week, should have been red, had the most frightening drive home Saturday evening from Dublin to Kerry, awful conditions. Some houses without water and ESP for a few days, road conditions terrible. I was in Kerry. I was in Kerry on Saturday night. And all Sunday, I left Killarney on the train at 2:30. Well, the train was delayed for nearly an hour because a branch had come down, was hit by the train coming into Killarney station. And then we were delayed between Mallow and Charleville. I was very happy to be able to get home on the train. Killarney was covered in snow, which is very unusual for Killarney. And that made me an awful lot more sympathetic to what was going on around the country, because those of us who were in Dublin this week didn't see a bit of snow.
But that's another issue that Met Aaron always say, and Alan Riley of Carlow Weather, that they can issue warnings for snow, but what I'm not an expert on it, but whatever the climate that we have, it is impossible to predict snowfall in Ireland and correct snowfall. So they could issue a status yellow alert like they did in Dublin. There's rain, no snow. They could issue a status orange down in Limerick and it warrants a status red. It's very, very hard to predict. And in hindsight, it's great for these people just sitting in their homes with no electricity granted to say it should have been red, but they're not the ones predicting it.
Unfair from that texter to say give the teachers extra holiday. Plenty non-teachers couldn't get to work for several days, says that listener. Okay, there's quite a lot coming in relation to this. I'm a HSE consultant in the Northwest. The number of people who cancelled appointments is shocking. Our waiting lists are bad enough without all these cancellations. Schools close today when the temperatures are 3 degrees and there's no snow. The yellow alerts need to be scrapped. RT today had an article about minus six in Roscommon overnight. So what? That's just winter. There are plenty of people afraid, often older people, who cancel hospital appointments. Orla?
I mean, the hospital appointment thing, I think that is a fair point. Obviously, you know, services are very overstretched and waiting lists are so long anyway that that's only going to further exacerbate it. But at the same time, let's say if a certain county, you know, someone was on the way to a hospital appointment and, you know, God forbid, crashed their car or something, then people would be saying, oh, you know, we should have had a higher warning. It was, you know, risky. And it's a hard one to call. But Met Aaron, I was watching the weather the other day and the weather forecaster was at pains to say it may be very bad here or there may be snow here, but elsewhere in the county there may not be. So like Ben said, it's incredibly difficult to say how bad it will be, but they need to warn people. We're all adults. We can say, actually, you know what? There could well be black ice on the road. I'm not going to drive to that appointment or drive to work tomorrow. We have to make a call in advance. Sometimes it's a good call. Sometimes it's not needed, but you need that information as an adult to then make the call whether or not it's safe to leave your home.
And just on that minus six in Roscommon being normal, I'm from Roscommon. That's not normal. And as Alan O'Reilly said the other evening on The Last Word, if it were normal, we'd all have snow tyres, which we don't.
A listener says, my father says we are definitely gone soft. He walked to school in short trousers with a shovel to clear the snow away back in the 1950s. That sounds like a Monty Python sketch.
I bet he walked 8 miles uphill to school and 9 miles uphill home.
A listener has sent in photographs of Ratmore in County Kerry, which is still covered in snow. As it happens, I passed through Ratmore twice on Saturday evening on the way to Mill Street in North Cork and back from Mill Street, and it was very heavy snow on Saturday evening. We were delighted that we were able to get a taxi back from Mill Street to Killarney, so thanks to the driver who actually did that. There are loads of people sending in from various parts of the country. Pictures from Kildare, just outside Maynooth. I had to drive to school, which was open, but my area was treacherous. It was uncomfortable, but I made my way. So take it easy on the teachers. People saying there's still snow in their yard in North Cork, in Tipperary, various parts of the country. So those who are not been sympathetic are like, Paul in Roscommon says, Ben, that there's nothing normal about Roscommon.
Nothing normal about, yeah. Or nothing normal about minus six in Roscommon.
No, just nothing normal about Roscommon. Paul is a regular text.
Take it as a compliment.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, well, let's move to what's been happening in California. We did have Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas with us a little bit earlier in relation to that. Let's hear, you know, there's been all the sort of stories. Marion quite rightly said there's an awful lot of people on very low, modest incomes with very small homes who are not going to be able to rebuild, who are going to have their lives utterly uprooted. Then you get an awful lot of the publicity about all of the millionaire Hollywood stars who've had their houses burned to the ground. Let's hear one of them, the actor James Woods, speaking to CNN about realising his house was on fire.
All the smoke alarms in our house alerted our phones that our house that we had just renovated for 3 years and had just finally moved into about 3 months ago, you know, all the smoke alarms are going off, so that's hardly a good sign.
Okay, an upset-sounding James Woods there, certainly. This is the nature of things like this, isn't it, that the celebrities get the attention when something like this happens?
I don't understand why, though, because, like, I saw a video today of Paris Hilton sharing her burned house. What's the objective of, like, media organisations sharing that? Is it to...
No matter how rich you are, though, it must be stressful to see your house being burnt down.
I'm sure it is, but I'm sure she has another house that she can go to. As you say, there's people on low incomes in Los Angeles, a lot of people on low incomes, and they've lost their homes, they have nowhere to go. So why aren't they being highlighted, whereas, you know, Paris Hilton, Jeff Bridges, these people who have millions.
Billy Crystal, Mel Gibson, yeah. Adam Brody, Sir Anthony Hopkins, John Goodman, Miles Teller, Eugene Levy.
Like, when you read out all those names, honestly, my reaction is, so what? Do you know?
You're very harsh, Ben.
No, but if you show me people who are working three jobs and their one-bedroom apartment burned down, I'd be way more sympathetic towards it. They live in LA. Like, wildfires in... If there was a wildfire that took out Leitrim, then I'd be shocked. A wildfire taking out LA isn't that surprising.
I mean, at the end of the day, people in general will be more likely to read something about Billy Crystal or Paris Hilton or whoever losing their home. Obviously, that's not more important. It's arguably less important because, as you say, they have millions of dollars. They can move to their second home or build another home or buy another home. But it was interesting while watching, you know, the horrific kind of apocalyptic scenes on screens over the last few days. Several times the reporters said that Mother Nature is the great leveller, and it is. It doesn't matter who you are or where your house is. If a fire is going to burn through it, a fire is going to burn through it.
I think a lot of people have been surprised that it would happen at this time of year.
Yeah.
But also then to discover that there hasn't been rain for about 8 months.
Yeah, so it's been interesting. So part of the reason it spread so rapidly is LA had essentially a period of drought for almost 2 decades where it rained very, very little. And then the past 2 years, there were about 6 months of very heavy rain, including the first half of last year. Then there was an extended period again of drought, about 6 to 8 months, where it barely rained a drop. So between that, there was like lots of vegetation from the intense period of rain a year ago. And then the drought for about 8 months after that, basically it became a tinderbox. So between the growth that was there and then the Santa Ana winds, which was blowing air back in and like really low density air, then that just like it was, you know, it was a tinderbox essentially. So that's why it's burning so rapidly.
And the water issues as well. They can't use the seawater, which is right beside it. And there's very little fresh water.
Ben, quite a few people think you're being a bit harsh. One person here says wealthy people still have things of sentimental value that can't be replaced.
Okay. Cool. They might have had the sentimental stuff in their other houses.
But they might not have.
They might not have. But, you know, I just find it very... it kind of turns me off the sympathetic angle when I hear about Paris Hilton losing a house.
I wonder about James Wood. A lot of people have no sympathy for James Wood, particularly because of some of the things that he said in relation to demolishing Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And one of his quotes, even though obviously he's clearly very audibly upset in that clip, you know, he was saying, oh, one day you're swimming in your pool and the next day it's all gone. So it's like not very relatable to most people. But then we had other people like Billy Crystal, who said him and his wife, you know, they've been in their house since the 70s. They've raised their grandkids and then their kids there. But he said, at the end of the day, my family's fine. My kids are fine. My grandkids are fine. We'll get through this. It's okay. Obviously, it's devastating to lose a home, but we will be fine. So I think it's putting it into that kind of context and perspective is important.
I accept
as well.
Billy Crystal. Perspective.
Okay, so he's okay to interview.
Why? Because you like his comedy or because he's lived in the same house for 40 years?
No, because he's being real about it and saying, look, it's fine. I've lost these sentimental things. Like for a lot of these people who live in LA, it's all about possessions and materialism. So they don't have sentimentality in the first place.
Another listener, some people agreeing with you, others giving out about you. And then one saying, ironically, the wealthy are some of the biggest contributors of CO2 and helps contribute to climate change. No sympathy for the wealthy in LA. They should have known what was coming.
I mean, I suppose they did know. They didn't have very much notice because it was pointed out that people like Adam Brody and Leighton Meester, who also lost their home, they were at the Golden Globes on Sunday night and then they had to evacuate. It was either Monday or Tuesday. So it is, again, that great leveller of you might be at a very glitzy Hollywood award ceremony on one day and then the next day you're told, pack up your stuff and get out. And then a day later, your house is razed to the ground.
But then, unfortunately, when you raise the climate change point, nothing will change. They'll rebuild their house. They'll probably build it with better materials instead of a lot of them are made with wood. And they don't care about what happens beyond their garden gate.
I mean, it is very frightening, though, globally. We have had so many extreme weather events in the last few years, and they're becoming more and more common. And, you know, you're right to say it is rare at this time of year to have fires in LA. It's not rare a bit later in the year, but the fire season has been extended and it just can happen at any time of year now because of climate change.
Yeah.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Elon Musk is using X, as he now calls Twitter, almost as a weapon in the culture wars and in trying to influence political outcomes. It's interesting to see the people that he platforms, such as the AfD leader in Germany, the far-right Alternative for Deutschland party. Here's a little bit of the interview he conducted this week with Alice Wiedel.
Welcome, Alice. Thank you for joining Spaces.
Thank you very much, Elon, for having me. It's a complete new situation for me that I just can have a normal conversation and I'm not interrupted or negatively framed. Yeah. Do you know like how long it takes, how many days it takes to get a business permit in Germany? Just
well,
guess.
As it turns out, I do, because we built...
the big plan.
We built a gigantic car factory near Berlin.
Everyone can choose to cross our border to immigrate into our social security system and cannot be deported afterwards because they threw away their passports.
How
insane is that?
Well, it is very insane, but that's exactly what's happened in the U.S. There's a sort of, a far-left agenda that's being pushed throughout Western civilization.
So there you are, the South African immigrant to the United States, Elon Musk, with Alice Weidel of the AFD pushing propaganda and myths, Orla. What should we make of this? What should the European Union, or countries within the European Union, do if this social media website has been used to push lies?
It's an interesting one. Obviously, the European Commission issued a warning prior to the interview taking place, you know, warning them to not spread misinformation. But I don't know if it was necessarily heeded. I don't believe that it was, but I don't know if they're going to do anything about it. I had the unenviable task of scrolling through Elon Musk's Twitter account earlier today. And just before, about half an hour ago, I checked the views on the interview, and it was about 6.4 million. And right before we came on air, it was about 6.6 million. So even in those 30 minutes or so, it had gone up a lot. There's not a huge amount the European Commission can do, and I think even if they slapped Elon Musk or X on the wrist, I don't think he would care, and he would continue to platform these people.
Didn't Brazil shut down Twitter for a while, or X? I mean, I know you'd have people saying this is disgrace, free speech been stopped and the rest of it, but free speech is not just a right without responsibilities. And to use the old cliche, free speech does not allow you to shout fire in a crowded room. Free speech does not allow you to take to a platform and tell outright lie after outright lie, particularly when those lies are designed to spread fear about certain people and make them targets.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the German elections are coming up next month, so there's a very specific reason he had the co-leader of AFD on now. And we saw it, you know, before Christmas with, you know, Trump being re-elected in the US. Elon Musk had a large role to play in that, and now he's, you know, currently best friends with Trump, and he's going to oversee, you know, Doge, the looking at government inefficiency in the US. So he's sort of positioning himself in these, pre-election chats in various different countries. We have it in Germany now, we've had it in the US before. There's no election coming up in the UK or Ireland, but he's also, you know, made comments about here. And we had an interesting one during the week where he said that, you know, Nigel Farage, who was hanging out with in Mar-a-Lago just a couple of weeks ago, he was saying, oh, I want him, you know, to be removed as leader of the Reform Party. And then Nigel Farage coming back and saying, well, you know, I disagree with Elon on that particular point, that I can't run my own party, but then very sycophantically saying, but also I still think he's a genius and I'd love to work with him in the future.
This is Elon Musk, who was promoting the career criminal Stephen Yaxley Lennon, otherwise known as the political performer Tommy Robinson, who is in prison again, this time because he's refusing to obey. He's in contempt of court for refusing to stop spreading lies about a Syrian refugee.
Yeah, like it is. We've seen kind of Musk evolve into this, I don't even know, would you even call it a political figure or an activist or something over the last couple of years? He has said in the past that it has been at the result of his child transitioning, and he was quite upset about that. But it's really quite unsettling to kind of watch it, because I don't know if you ever saw the movie a few years ago, Don't Look Up, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence.
Which is the climate change movie, which so many people thought was a bit ham-fisted, too heavy-handed in the way it tried to spread its message.
Yeah, but there was this, billionaire tech entrepreneur character in it, where this asteroid's about to hit the Earth and he realises that these minerals that could advance technology...
In the asteroid. And he could make money out of it.
Exactly. And that, it just feels like this kind of weird megalomaniac kind of attitude towards the world, where he's able to play with borders and play with governments. Because, like, you know, like the Greenland thing as well during the week, like... Is he looking at the resources that could be there and having a word in Trump's ear? Like, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. But it is quite unsettling to see that he is willing to play with politics, particularly with Germany, because, like, you know, if the AfD got into power in Germany, he would have a friend in the largest economy in Europe, and that could help with Twitter and the deregulation that it wants to do.
What about Musk's attempts to get involved in Irish politics, Orla?
Yeah, so for not the first time, he's been retweeting some questionable stuff in relation to the Irish context. People might remember the time of the November 23 riots. He retweeted a lot of stuff at that point. But
when you say stuff, this was far-right extremist views.
Far-right extremists, you know, anti-immigrant views, you know, saying things that weren't necessarily true and in some cases were outright lies, but he was retweeting it. And as I said, it was on his Twitter account earlier today, and just the volume of stuff that he tweets and retweets all day, every day. I don't know how he has time to run his multiple companies and, you know, get involved in various elections, because he just seems like he's constantly tweeting and retweeting and therefore doesn't have time to fact check things, shockingly. But he retweeted something earlier the other day by a well-known far-right agitator, which basically claimed that Muslim illegal immigrants, quote, have been handed lesser sentences for raping women in Ireland, which is just not true. But in this particular tweet, the guy, he cited a particular court case from 23 years ago when, you know, an asylum seeker from Algeria, the judge in this particular case said he was, quote, only giving him 6 years rather than 10 years because he wasn't from here and the prison environment would be more difficult for him. And you can, you know, you can say that was a bad thing, that should not have happened. But that was one particular case from 23 years ago. So to say that, you know, en masse, anyone who happens to be Muslim or an immigrant gets a lesser sentence for raping women or for, you know, a sexual assault crime is just not true. There was an interesting piece in The Examiner by Cormac O'Keefe today, and he spoke to Alan Green, who's a legal expert in Birmingham Law School, and he was just saying, you know, the Ireland of 2001 is very different from the Ireland of today, and that necessarily wouldn't happen today, and that it's also just not true to say that, you know, fewer Irish people are in prison or getting shorter sentences, I should say. He pointed to as well, Mr. Green, statistics from 2022, which showed that non-Irish citizens comprised 22% of all people in prison, while Irish people compared to 12% of the total population in Ireland. So they are actually disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. So it's just not true on any level to say they're, you know, less likely to be jailed or to get lesser sentences. It's just not true.
Anything else to add to that, Ben?
Not really. No, I think Orla has covered a lot on that point.
OK, well, in that case, will you tell us about the stay-at-home parents and the estimate that the work that they do, the unpaid work, is worth €57,000 per annum. That's what we would need to pay them to properly compensate them for their work at home.
Yeah, very interesting study. Now, nothing, stay-at-home parents do a great job. They raise their children, and for a lot of them, it's their own choice. For a lot of people, they have no choice but to become stay-at-home parents. But the methodology of how they calculated this survey was a bit strange. They kind of categorised five different areas of work. It was childcare, cleaning, cooking, and they took the average salaries and the average working hours that they put into it each week, calculated it up. But then they got down into DIY work. Stay-at-home parents are supposed to be doing four hours of DIY work every week. They're supposed to be doing an hour of gardening every week. And another one that they put into it was taxi driver. And they estimated that there would be 10 trips a week where they would be driving their own children around. And
In their own car.
And they calculated them at peak rate and heavy traffic. Now, I just wonder, like, who asked for this? You know, like, they're being parents. Like, parents who work go home. They do the cleaning, they do the cooking, they do the taxi services. Why aren't they calculating this as well? And can I go to Royal London,
pension and life insurance company that provided the calculation, probably looking for people to purchase life insurance to cover the cost of if this person was no longer at home to do all of that work.
Exactly. And can I go to them and get them to calculate my salary? Because they'd probably more than double it. If this is what they're coming up with.
Why, are you doing any DIY and gardening and childcare around the offices here, Ben?
Like, the majority of people in this country are doing they get caught with the extra duties in their work. And a stay-at-home parent, no disrespect to them, but it was just the way that it was calculated. It's is valued at more than the median working wage in the country?
Well, to be fair, I think the value of stay-at-home parents is undervalued. The methodology there is very questionable. But if you were to add up the hours of, you know, childcare, which is particularly when they're younger, around the clock, it's 24/7 in some cases, particularly if a child is unwell.
But not according to Royal London Irish, it's only 30 hours a week. The other 138 hours.
See, that's very questionable.
Hours.
I think they could well be worth 57,000 euro a year or whatever, or more, but the methodology there is questionable.
And what about the people who come home from work and then should be paid for the work they do at home after they've come home from work? We've got to leave it there. Thank you very much. Ben Finnegan, who'll be back with the 6 to 6, and Orla Ryan from thejournal.ie.
The Last Word on Today FM.